What is going on, people? Welcome to the BARF, breaking news, acquisition, research, and funding. That was my announcer voice. William, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great. Sunday, 21st. Feeling good. We got a lot of cool stories to go through.
Yeah, so, a lot of stories. I don't know if they're cool. Your hair is looking, I wanted to tell you this when we got on camera. Yeah. Your hair is looking mighty flowy today.
See, this is what happens when I condition my hair. Seriously, this is what happens. On the off chance that I condition my hair, this is what happens.
Yeah, I don't even know what that word means. Condition to me means like conditional logic. That's the only condition I know.
I've never been a person that I wash my hair every once in a while, and I don't condition it all that often because I've never put a lot of products in it. So it's just kind of a bit for my whole life. But when I condition my hair, it's usually when I get my beard trimmed, is because I don't own a razor, so I'll go to Great Clips so that they trim my beard. But they also
condition your hair.
They wash your hair. So they wash your hair and they also condition it. It's like, I don't do this shit at home, but all right, let's go.
So do you think if I went in to get my beard trim,
they would
wash my head?
Oh, they could.
They probably would. They give me a scalp massage, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm down for that. But how much
can't
is
hurt.
It?
Oh, it's not that much. It's like $8. It's
$8 isn't bad.
No, it's worth it.
Talk about hair. All right. So
we're going to have hair talk.
Hair talk. So you've got two boys. So they're not.
I do.
If they're getting hair salon and appointments, that's their thing.
No.
So my oldest, 16, her last time she got her hair done, whatever she got, $300 and some dollars, right?
Oh, snap.
Right.
Okay.
No. She just went this week, and she had a friend's cousin or something or other did her hair, $180, and that was a discount.
Is she getting it colored?
She got highlights and trimmed and whatever. She's 16.
Color costs money.
Yeah.
That's true.
Color, nothing. Get out of here.
No, my boys go to Great Clips.
It's a $24 trip plus tax. Exactly. You know, it's all good. Exactly. It's all good.
All right.
Kick us off today. What do we got?
All right. Have you heard of Ozempic? Like, you've seen the commercials?
No, right? that's O'Reilly that's Auto Part. Oh,
that's it. Ozempic. So, here's what's happening, and you can see it in North Carolina, but you kind of see it across the United States too. The weight loss drugs, there's another one, WEGOVY. I don't know it as well as Ozempic.
Wegovy. They got a lot of commercials.
Okay. So their drug costs are really, really high, mostly because they don't produce a lot. Mm. And so the costs are through the roof, right? So, and these are things that actually help people lose weight. So this isn't a scam. These are actually drugs that actually help people lose weight. So the insurance companies are now, they're jacked up their prices because pharma jacked up their prices, and employers are now kind of having to either make the decision to either pay for those things or to not pay for them. And this is what's going on. You can look at this story. It's in Politico.com. So you can go and look at the story. But they're talking about North Carolina because this is happening with large employers in North Carolina where they're basically cutting out that cost and saying that's an out-of-pocket expense, which is crazy to me. And it's the reason I wanted to kind of pitch it to you is like, you know, first of all, if this were a cancer drug and it was, again, and it was high and all that stuff, would we be outraged? Yeah, of course we would. Right?
We'd be outraged, but it would also be part of what is offered. And weight loss, I don't know that that should be any different, right? I mean, I'm not a doctor, but being overweight leads to a lot of problems.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah. Right. So if you could be preventative, then why wouldn't you cover Ozempic? We'll just use that as an example. Why wouldn't you cover Ozempic for your employees? But it's we're going to look at what's happening in North Carolina. Definitely go check out the article on Politico. But I think we're going to see this more and more because the drug cost is so high, it's not going to go down because the demand is just going to go up. So it's going to go up higher, which means that insurance companies, they got to recover their costs. Employers are going to cut it out because it costs too much. And I think it's sad because, again, this is something that could prevent a lot of things down the line. And it could actually, you know, like people are always, to us, they're always talking about, like, how do I retain my top employees? How do I hire people? You know,
the weight loss drugs.
Hey, during a recruiting event, if somebody were obese, I would actually, I'd lead with that. It's like, hey, you're familiar with Ozempic, right?
This is why you're not in recruitment.
See, we cover
this
that.
Is why you're on this side of the microphone.
We cover that shit. Come on in. We got you.
All right. Do you have Sheetz down there in Arlington?
We do.
You do. Yep. So Sheetz is making some headlines this week for rejecting indigenous and black candidates due to criminal records. So this is it. This is it's actually pretty it's interesting what's going on here. So they disproportionately screened out American Indian, Alaskan Natives, black and multiracial applicants during the hiring process. So
interesting.
Yeah, so the claim here states that they have a long-standing practice of screening candidates out due to prior run-ins with the law and convictions. Yeah. And so, of course, we got some numbers behind this. But so black applicants, 14%, 14.5% more likely. Uh-huh. Indigenous, 13%. Multiracial, 13.5%. And then, of course, whites are the highest at 8%.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. Whites are way down the list. They're just getting accepted. So I thought this is interesting because Sheetz is not a small organization. Right?
No,
we don't have – I think we may have a few up here. We don't have
that. Is it that they're screening out brown people, or is it that they're screening out people with criminal records? Or the thing that we probably would have to dig in to find out is are the brown people – I'm going to say that because I can't actually say that. Are brown people's the criminal record – is the criminal record more harsh? Like, are those murder and grand theft auto and harsher felonies? So it's one thing to kind of run a headline and say, oh, we're screening out brown people. Okay, got it. However, if it's apples to apples and the felonies are the same, okay, murder, got it. You know, rape, got it. And then you did that by demographic data, then they should be held liable. Like that's just crap. Now, if you dig into that, you find out actually the felonies weren't all the same. You know, not all felonies should be treated the same.
No, they shouldn't, and that's what the claim is. So the EEOC obviously is alleging this and putting this forward. However, what this gets into is that people within certain categories are predisposed to certain environments,
right?
Which is creating that wide gap there. And it just so happens, I'm sure this happens with a lot of employers, it just so happens that Sheetz is leading that race right
now. It'd be interesting to dig in there maybe down the road and see if technology is involved here, if they're just doing it human to human, you know what I'm saying? Like if you know Bob in recruiting, you know, hates brown people. All right, let's see if that's it, or if it's actually tech that they're using.
I'm sure they're using. I mean, so they're a large company. I'm sure they're using tech for background.
I'm
not sure of the rest, but nonetheless, interesting, and people should know about that.
100%. Google fires 28 employees after sit-in protest over controversial Project Nimbus,
whatever,
contract with Israel. This is on TechCrunch, so you go find out about there. So we've talked a little bit about this type of stuff before. It was more of the CEO was pro-Israel, and a bunch of employees didn't like that and left or whatever. This is actually they fired people. so you know, it begs the question, for me, in terms of like leadership, has to be more active in defining what is and isn't acceptable at work. This isn't new. People have had sit-ins, you know, like this isn't a new bit, but it seems like this is going to be more vocal with the younger generation. It's going to be something that companies are going to have to contend with one way or another. I mean, if you lay down a strategy or lay down kind of your guidelines and say, yeah, we don't talk about politics at work, period, end of story. You bring politics in the workplace, you've decided to quit. Yeah, we might fire you or you might quit, but you've just made that decision. Yeah. I think the guardrails are going to have to get clear around stuff like this.
Yeah, it's this. I believe we just had a show about this somewhere along the line, or something came up where I've always been confused. Can you or can an employer prevent you from talking about politics at work? Or is it more of a guideline or a suggestion like, hey, you shouldn't be talking about things like this at work? And I've always been confused on that and what I can and can't say in a corporate environment.
Right.
But it's, you know, they're polarizing topics that create problems.
It's, you know, when they say they want your whole you at work, this is the shit that drives me crazy.
Right. Yeah, you want my real authentic self?
Want my real authentic self? Yeah. Okay, you know what? I'm going to have a sit-in. Well, okay, that's my authentic self. So, right. Like...
Now, a sit-in, if you're disrupting the workday with things...
That's a different thing.
That's very different. Yeah. But if you're just voicing an opinion or talking to people...
Wearing a t-shirt.
I think that's different as well. Anyhow, all right, let's move on to workday. So I'm an EEOC fan today. I'm following their thing. I'm following their news. Their line.
Ryan
of news
Leary,
this week.
EEOC expert. Good gosh.
I'm telling you. So the question is: should Workday face a lawsuit? Right. So EEOC says, hell yes. Mm-hmm. Workday should face a lawsuit, alleging that its AI screening tool is biased. Right. So check this out.
Is that native or are they using a partner for that?
Beats me. It sounds like it's native. I don't know.
It wouldn't matter because it's still under their brand.
It's still under their brand, right? So the allegation is that Workday is allowing employers to pre-select applicants outside of protected categories, which violates Title VII in the Civil Rights Act 1964. So. Obviously, Workday says this case has no merit, that they're arguing that they are not the employer. They're not the staffing firm. They're not the employer. They're not the employment agency or labor. They're just the tech. And these are features within the tech.
I've always been fascinated with this, not with Workday in this particular regard, but like in the sourcing tools where you can turn on like women. Okay, so you're searching for a Java developer, and you
can
turn on.
Is there a difference to this?
You can click the button and say, "I want female candidates." Boop. I want African American candidates. Boop. Or you could turn that off.
Boop. Right.
I'm not. I really want to track this to find out actually how this plays out on the tech side. I don't think they're liable. I think Workday will actually win this because
they're not
the technology.
Liable. They're the technology, and they're not making the decisions. This is an issue of the employer and the hiring teams and what they're doing.
Unless they customized it, you know what I'm saying? Like unless they're the ones that not just the implementation, but unless they've actually created it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they just basically gave them the tool and said, "Hey, you can do," there's several different ways this can be configured,
right?
And the employer configured it in a way that should be configured. That's on them.
Yeah, but you bring up a good point on, and we'll keep moving forward here. But so, and really any software, but sourcing tools in particular, that's always been we've talked about this. Always been a question. There was debates around. Oh my gosh, you're looking at LinkedIn profile photos now. You know the person's Chinese.
Yeah. Or photogenic.
Or I'm using a sourcing tool and I'm specifically saying, give me Asian women. Or black women, or not black women, what is the difference, right? And so, I think these are people have these answers. I don't have these answers.
No,
I
don't think
complaints
anybody,
and the thoughts.
It's an ethical and moral dilemma that no one has the answers to.
Right.
So
nope.
No.
We'll have to find somebody that has them and bring them on the show.
Good luck.
I will find that person.
All right. Just comes from fastcompany.com. Generative AI's refusal to produce controversial content can create echo chambers. This is fascinating to me.
I don't know what that means.
Okay, so when you're using Gen AI and you say, hey, I want a black Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of these different models got in trouble because the images that they created
right.
were historically incorrect, right?
Yeah.
You know, like black KKK members, you know, okay, you can kind of run down the list, Hispanic Hitler, you know, all that kind of mm-hmm. shit. So you can create all that stuff. And then all of a sudden they pulled back from that. These models did and said, yeah, we're not going to do that shit. So now what's interesting about that is the intersection between Gen AI and free speech. So if someone wants to create a black Jesus or a Hispanic Hitler,
they're
horrible examples. I get it. But if they want to, why can't they? So when I read it, it's like what it made me think about was how do we navigate free speech in the future as it relates to Gen AI and who gets to decide what is and isn't protected at work. So I'm really thinking on the work side, it's like things are going to happen mm-hmm. with Gen AI. And again, who decides what's controversial? It's sort of controversial, you know what I'm saying? Like the controversial, you know, for me, you could use an image and it could be stripper glitter. Like I'd be all right with that. But for other businesses, they would not be all right with that.
Right.
And the right now what's happening is the Gen AI tools are making that decision. Instead of the human being, instead of the boss, instead of the employee, instead mm-hmm. of that. No, those applications are making the decision for you. So just think about free speech. Think about content that's going to be created for you and how it intersects with work and free speech.
That works for me.
There you go.
All right. I'm going to go with a local story, Drexel University. I did not go to Drexel. I went to Temple. I could have went anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I chose Temple.
100%.
Definitely not. all right. So there's a Drexel. This one is actually, I think, very relevant to anybody in the audience. And one I think that's going to get a lot of conversation, debate around it. So a Drexel executive, Drexel University executive who is diagnosed with PTSD.
Okay.
Alleges that a mandatory Zoom meeting violated ADA.
Hmm.
Okay. So they were forced to be on and I don't have all the details clearly,
right.
But they were forced to be on a Zoom call on video to speak with a number of people. And they said they weren't comfortable. They didn't want to be on this call. They didn't mind being on the call. They didn't want to be on video for this particular call because it was causing them stress and anxiety. And so things happened, bad things happened, not bad things, but it didn't go the way that Drexel or whomever was on the call would really have wanted the call to go. So, and I think there's more to the story, I'm sure, and I know every organization has different thoughts on this and this. And we've spoken a lot about accommodations in the workplace being super critical.
Right.
We've also talked about interactive process a lot, but we've kind of brushed over it a lot too. And I think I don't know that a lot of organizations actually have an interactive process, and I'm not sure many people know what an interactive process is. It's just, you know, it's not just two people taking part in a discussion, right? This is where the employee is actually part of the conversation, discussing their own accommodations, helping to build their own accommodations.
Right.
And they don't have that there. And that's part of some of the
thing that throws me is mandatory Zoom. So mandatory Zoom is like any type of mandatory meeting. You and I do a ton of podcasts, and so there's a lot of people that join our podcast that aren't on video. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of our friends, when we get on calls with them, aren't on video, and they never turn on video.
I'm so tempted to just close the camera right now just for the hell of it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care. It's, if that, but you know what I'm saying? Like, if this is an executive, one would assume that they're adding value to the company, et cetera. And if they don't want to be on video, they don't need to be on video. Like, again, Zoom and all of the technologies that we used prior to COVID, we weren't on video. By and large, we just used them as a way to do calls, conference calls. It was conference call technology. So the join-ins or join-me's and all of the Uber conference and all those things, we just used them to call people.
And then kind of went back old school there.
COVID, I know, right?
Three years ago.
COVID made us all get on video because we wanted to, you know, see people and see what's going on. We wanted to kind of attach all kinds of stuff there. This is one of those deals that's super easy to resolve. It's like, hey, you don't want to be on video for this call or for any calls? Great. Don't be on the call. I mean, don't be on video. It's okay. Right. Still add value to you. And now the second part of this about accommodations is sometimes people can't advocate or don't feel like they can do a proper job of advocating for their own accommodations. Mm-hmm. That's a separate issue. So I think it's now you need an ombudsman or you need HR to step in and help be an advocate for accommodations for everybody.
Correct.
So good fun. I like it. So you're a big Snapchatter, right?
I do not have Snapchat on my phone.
You're on Tinder, right?
But I Tinder, yes. No, I'm kidding. Just kidding, honey. I love you.
Don't even know which one's. I can't even tell you which one the swipe is.
Yeah.
So that's how
I can tell Tinder, you. My kids are on there because all they do.
Yes. I don't want to know. I'm in that phase.
I'm not sure what I look. That's what they take pictures like every 2 seconds. They're swipe picture left, picture. Right. Yeah, whatever.
That ends badly. So Snap, the company, they rebranded, obviously, Snapchat to Snap, plans to add watermarks to images created with AI-powered tools.
Ooh.
So here's what I like about this. So this is in TechCrunch, so you could just go and Google Snap and watermarks, and you'll find the article. But what I love about this is as we move to using more generative AI at work, and trust, we've already talked about that several times. It'd be nice to be aided in understanding what we can trust or what we know is Gen AI and what isn't, or what's simulated. And I think it's okay if it's simulated. If something's made and it's made with Gen AI, like, I'm okay with that. I just think the user needs to know.
Yeah,
that's all. I think.
You have to let people know if it's a sponsored posting or if it's an ad. Why not?
Right. Just put it on there. Yeah. Well, they've got, so what they're going to do is they're actually going to put this little Snapchat sparkly little thing, watermark, on the image. So when you see that, you'll be able to say, oh, okay, that was made with Gen AI.
Yeah.
And then the article, it has like a cat that turns into a panda bear or some shit.
Yeah.
But it's got like the little Gen AI sticker on it. I'm like, we need to see more of that from Facebook, LinkedIn, from everybody.
Yeah, and I don't mind. Honestly, I don't on the social feeds. I don't mind it.
No,
because I don't care what I'm looking at. Like, if it's interesting, it's interesting. Right. I don't care who made it or what made it. Now, if I'm getting an email or something from a recruiter and it says this email was generated with AI, and then I'm probably not going to read the email.
I'd probably put it at the bottom. Just like the people put the claim of
or the unsubscribe or anything like that.
Yeah,
but I would
just letting people know
it would lose its impact, or could they assist it with or something? I don't know. Like that would be weird for me. I don't want to know that.
I would think more of the person if they told me that. You know what I'm saying? Like if someone told me that, I had a person one time, a CEO of a very a real popular company actually emailed me one time after I had emailed a bunch of CEOs and said, do you make these emails up yourself? Or do you like, you have like a, you know, comedy club, or you like, do you like, cause mm-hmm. you know my writing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I actually typed that out.
I don't know
if he was pissed about it or.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how to help people read the entire email. Like, I mean, they're actually really good. When you read them, they're very good. But I get like halfway down and I'm like, I can't go any further.
Just get there. Just say the
tell me
TLDR.
What you want. How much what? Money do you want from me? What do you want? Oh, God.
So, anyhow, more things like Snap, more of those types of things. Just let people
I like
know.
It. I like it. All right. So Mercado Libre is on a hiring spree. 18,000 hires about to hit the company. So these if you're all not familiar with Mercado, they're an Argentine based e-com firm. So think like Amazon.
Yeah.
Similar, right? So all of this is in Latin America, though. So
I think they're the e-com tech.
They're the e-com tech, correct? Yeah. So this is all Latin American hiring. So from Mexico, LATAM, from Mexico to Brazil, Argentina, that's where they're all going to be. But 18,000 of them.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
And first of all, that's great.
Yeah, majority is going to be in logistics. So not sure. And 2,500 is techs, but the remainder will be in tech. I should say. I'm not sure what they'll be doing, but a lot of hiring.
That's fantastic. That's just great to hear. Hiring, great. I don't care where it is. Just more hiring, more better.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've talked about pregnant workers a couple times on the show, and they finally they've got a due date on the final rule of the implementation of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. I think that's PWFA, if you're into acronyms. This is at federalregister.gov. So you can go and look at the implementation of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. So final rule is effective on June 18th, which is about 2 months away. So it's been a long time coming. It's been reviewed. It's been going about, you know, okay, just make sure your company's compliant. Because I think you've covered one or two stories about companies that have not been compliant. Yeah.
I was going to say we talked about this last week, but no.
Well, they get the final rule just came down.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm surprised I missed it because I have been.
Dude, you've been all over this. The Federal Register site is actually fascinating because they publish stuff, all kinds of cool stuff there. But you know, no one reads.
No one reads a lot of it.
That site doesn't get any love. It's like, if you go there, they actually, like on the actual final rule, you can click into it and it'll show you all the different implementations.
Right.
Like it's fascinating and I'm sure no one uses it. So
probably
anyhow, not. Just make sure you're compliant, folks.
Yep. All right.
Speaking of compliance.
Speaking of compliance, you like Chipotle?
I don't actually.
I don't understand the fascination with going to a restaurant, standing in line for 20 minutes at a fucking buffet line to just get to the line. And I love buffets. Trust me. Look at me. I love buffets.
Yeah.
I know there's not a buffet, but I love like line food and all that stuff. But you get there and there's chicken everywhere and beans and dirt. And then there's people in the back and there's food on the floor. And I just don't get it. Like I can, whatever. Anyway, it's like going there, just like going 30 minutes in a Chick-fil-A line. Like Jesus Christ.
Chicken's good. It's not
chicken,
that good.
It's a chicken fucking nugget. Like, come on. Anyway, so Chipotle is settling.
That's the title of the show. It's a fucking chicken nugget.
It's a fucking chicken nugget. So Chipotle settling for $3 million they're not paying people and they're scheduling bad. So they're for paid leave issues and for scheduling. And so there's 1,853 people that are going to get this. So I did the math earlier. It's like $1,600 a piece, right? So they're not retiring.
Yeah, no, no.
But they're going to get a payday, right? And so what's happening here is that they're scheduling employees for shifts outside of the four. There's a 14-day rule, right? And so they're scheduling them within the week to say you need to work this specific shift. And then if an employee says, "Oh, hey, I can't do that," then they're being retaliated against and docked pay. And then when they're actually working additional hours, they're also not getting compensated appropriately for that. So again, this is more in the lines of like Subway and Jersey Mike's mm-hmm. and all the other ones that we found recently where they're just not paying their people.
Yeah.
They're just not paying their people.
We don't know if it's Chipotle proper or if it's franchised or any of those types of things. But
yeah.
It's if you're struggling to find employees, if you're struggling to retain employees, this is the type of shit that gets uh-huh. that we don't talk enough about.
Yeah.
It's like we talk about, you know, it's a lot of the headier stuff, like, oh, okay, just do these things. Like, well, you know, if you just pay people,
treat them like human beings. Let me throw this at you, because this is really getting on my case, and I hope they hear this. They're local, so they're not going to hear it because they have nothing to do with what we would do. But maybe I'll send them a link through their little contact form or some shit like that, and I'll timestamp it for them. So my daughter works at a place called Stove and Tap. Okay. She works at a place called Stove and Tap. She's a hostess there. She gets paid X amount of money for being a hostess. They also said when you do running for the tables, you'll get this money, but you'll also receive tips for the running.
Right.
Okay. She's been there now for a month, maybe a little month and a half, a little more, right? It's a second job for her. She likes to work. So she's been doing the hosting job.
Right.
Yesterday, they said, okay, we're going to put you on running now. Fantastic. They gave her a t-shirt. She went and did that. She had a clock out as a hostess.
Right.
Clock in as a runner.
Yeah. So they got the time, right? Yeah.
Well, not just the time. Hey. Now they're paying her a training rate of $4 an hour and what? No tips. And no tips. So I'm livid. She's like, well, what are you talking about? Like, I'm training. They're paying me a training. Like,
if anybody told me,
I'm going to cross-train you for another job in the company so you can make us more money, but I'm going to pay you $9 less an hour and not give you tips.
That should be criminal. If that's not criminal, that should be criminal.
Yeah, I have a problem with this. No, they told me it's a training rate because I'm training.
No.
No, you're already an employee. Here's the training.
Take this there. All right, training over.
Like, you're an employee. You're not like, no. I'm blown away by this. And I would
basically, I'll keep my hosting gig. I'm good.
Yeah. Maybe she'll make more with tips. I don't know. But the fact that they're taking an employee who's there, moving them into a second role and docking their pay.
Are we shocked that people have a trouble attracting talent? Oh, really?
God, it just
can't. We can't be shocked.
It literally took every fiber in my body to not turn around and go.
Let me see your manager.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, do you know who you're talking to, homie? Like, come on. You know, like, I was, whatever. All right, I'm off my soapbox. Take it.
Well done. All right, let me pitch you this one. LinkedIn announces verification for recruiters to help address scam pitches.
Oh, I like it.
So this is going to be like a blue mark or some type of star or a unicorn or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
Done this on socialmediatoday.com. You can go put in LinkedIn and verification. You'll find it. So, you know, first of all, I'm not sure this is a good – I got to really think about this. I don't know if this is a good thing or not, especially if candidates already don't like recruiters because now they're going to have this scarlet letter. On their profile, which again it could be a good thing for candidates. So like, okay,
yeah,
obviously a recruiter's reaching out to me and they're a verified recruiter. Okay, I can trust that this is something real. Or because recruiters, if you go to Reddit, and read anything on Reddit about recruiters, you know, it turns out they don't have a great reputation. So I don't know if it necessarily helps recruiters.
I don't.
And it makes them less likable or more likable. Like, what's your bit? When I first told you that, what do you think?
I like it. I'm opposite, so I like it. I think so. Whether you have a blue check mark or not, right? Whether you're verified or not, they're going to know you're a recruiter. It's in your job title. Like, it doesn't matter, right? Now, if the verification isn't just, oh, yes, Ryan is a recruiter.
Yeah.
Right? No, Ryan's a verified recruiter because Ryan did this.
Could help. Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Could
Ryan help. Has a number of recommendations. Ryan has a number of maybe, you know, as a recruiter, I'm held to a different standard, right? So LinkedIn essentially was built
by
for recruiters, right? Like, yep. Let's be real. And so if I would have no problem as a recruiter, if I was still recruiting, for LinkedIn to say, hey, if you want to be verified, we need to monitor your in-mails. We need to monitor your messaging, not your what you're saying, but your acceptance rate, your interaction rate, your
so you're
recommendations.
Not just spamming people.
Right. Yeah. So not every recruiter gets it, but a job seeker knows that if I have a blue check, well, 40%, at least 40% of my messages are being not open, but replied to. My jobs are being placed. I'm confirmed that they're being placed. My recommendations.
That puts more of an onus on the recruiter to actually
be a recruiter.
We joke all be a recruiter. Because we talk all the time about in-mails and how horrible they are.
Yeah. Look, if you want to go sell on Amazon. If you want to buy on Amazon, I go right to the reviews. Like, I'll see the same product four times. It could be sold by the same company. I'm going to the one that has 700 reviews over 50.
100%.
That's their check mark. We should have one too. I love that one.
All right. Turn me
around. I love it. Hold on, let me record that. Are we recording still? Because I want to make sure everyone knows that I've turned you. And convinced you otherwise. All right. So,
William Flip Flops.
There's the title. It's the chicken fucking nugget and William Flip Flops. So when people over in the UK, they'll say, "That's brilliant." That's an awful accent. I know. I used to record. I've recorded that a couple of times. I said, "Look, honey, I'm brilliant." She's like, "That just means like knowledge."
That's horrible.
Like, bless your heart, child. God, I'll never forget when Jackie Clayton said that to me. She's like, "You know, that's not a good thing." I'm like, I thought I was being blessed. Anyhow, I'm excited for this one because sort of excited. I really like this idea. But I was more excited when I read it. First, a headline, because I saw 4 days a week, and I thought, that's it. It's over. The debate is over. We're doing 4 days a week, and it turns out that it's just 4 days a week in the office.
Yes.
But I still actually do like this. So Truist is tightening up the in-office attendance policy, right?
Right.
So their push behind this, they want to reinvigorate the connected culture feel that they once had. Get it? Okay. So 4 days a week in the office starting in the fall for everybody. And then for their investment bankers, they're in the office every day starting June 1st. So this is, and I'll get your take on this, of course, but this isn't new in financial, right? This isn't new on Wall Street. They've been doing this for a while. A lot of dev companies want to do this as well. But for some reason, probably because I'm not actually going into the office, I'm not there. I like the idea. I think it would be nice to get back into an office and get back to life as it was in some respect. That said, this is my office right here.
Dude,
so if I had to get dressed every day and go to an office, I'd probably quit. So I'm just saying. That said,
Wall Street pays people enough money
to get to the office.
To get to the office. And if you don't want to be an investment banker, you don't want to work on Wall Street.
Don't do the job. You don't want to look at a screen all day, don't be a fucking developer.
100%.
Same thing.
Yeah. So if and then JP Morgan, all of them, they all kind of they want you to be in the office. It's not just the that they want to see you work type stuff, because it is outcomes based. A lot of that stuff that what they do is outcome based. You either make money for the company or you don't. But you know, they, it's again, this is not an industry that's cheap. No. They pay people really well and bonus people. So again, I mean, I went to business school with a bunch of guys that just, they went investment banking, either consulting or investment banking. And that was their bit. It's like, I'm going to investment banking. I'm going to work 10 hours. I'm going to go work 10 years, put in 120 hours a week, and then I'll go do something else.
Right.
But they knew the bit. Like, they knew what they were getting themselves into.
Right. Right.
This is what's interesting is this, in the conflict of Gen Z and generations after that, that just, they didn't see Wall Street. They didn't grow up with, you know, the movie, or they didn't grow up all that stuff. And they're going to be like that. Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. I can do that shit from my house. That'll be interesting to see if they become flexible or if they just keep recruiting the same type of people.
Yeah. And I've never been on the floor. Right. So I don't know what it's like on the trading floor and all of that. But I do know what it's like on a sales floor in a bullpen type environment. I don't think I've ever had the energy that I had there.
Oh, 100%.
That I do here, right? Like in a sales environment.
You can't slack. You don't want to slack.
No.
That's the irony. It's like
you want to earn. You want to earn.
But well, and everything's weighted that way too. Like your bonus is weighted that way, your pay is weighted that way, you're graded out that way. It's like, you're not sitting there playing Candy Crush on your phone.
No, and
those types of environments, it's like I want to outwork, out hustle, outshine.
And there's a different. Like, I get it. All different sales are all different, no matter where you are. The conversations are different, the cadence is different, all of that stuff. But when I was on a floor. When I was in a bullpen style environment, you have a headset on. There's 90 people talking around you, and you're talking, with more energy than them because you need to close a deal.
Sure.
And you need to talk over them because everyone else can hear what they're saying because the headphones just weren't fantastic back then. Same idea here, but the energy is not. The energy is not the same. Now that could
It's hard to get that energy, that bullpen energy. It's hard to get that at home.
By yourself, I mean, I guess I could play the ambient noise. I could play the Wolf of Wall Street in the background and do it, but
it's not gonna be the same. Yeah. All right, we are on to the A's, the acquisitions. We got a couple here real quick. We'll run through these.
Yeah.
Job Cannon acquires AdsMe. That's ADSME to transform AI-driven job recruitment. This is found on TechEU, so you can just look up Job Cannon. But basically, it's a Ukrainian startup that acquires another Ukrainian startup. How often do we get to say that? But basically, Job Cannon uses AI to simplify the job search, and AdsMe. It provides ad recommendations, so more of the kind of what we see with Appcast and some of those types of players. So these are two firms that basically didn't do what the other one did. So the feature set kind of comes together. I think it's a merge. It was a straight up acquisition. Terms weren't disclosed, but I think the customers went. So I think it's a good thing.
Good for them.
Good for them. Good for their customers. Everybody wins. All right. TopTel expands leadership in custom software development with the acquisition of ViranIT.com. So if we're not TopTel, or you can say Top Talent.
I always say TopTel.
Topple? No, it's short for Top Talent. Anywho, it's exclusive.
I say water, you say water.
No, you're a potato. So TopTal is the exclusive network of top freelance talent. They could say the top 3%. So it's actually kind of fascinating. So like on Fiverr, they'll accept people with a pulse. right? And in some of these other ones, they don't really care. I mean, your rankings will kind of sort out whether or not you're good or all that other stuff. But these folks actually vet their talent, and you've got to be great at what you do. You've got to be in the top 3%. And then they'll let you into the network. So what they did with this acquisition, so they acquired a software development company.
Right.
And the reason for that is so they could speed up.
It wasn't a small company, 120, 130 employees.
No. And again, they could have worked with this company forever, but they brought development in, and the reason they brought development in is to speed up innovation.
Sure.
Just so we now have these folks. Everybody's remote. In fact, I believe they're 100% remote. I will have to fact check that. But I remember on their website, this is on toptal.com in their press center. So you can go read about it. But I believe they're the world's largest remote work company. So anyhow, cool acquisition, because it's like, okay, they can see development needing to happen faster and iterating faster. And they went out and they were probably already working with this firm to begin with. And,
yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
And bought them.
Yeah.
All right.
Nice.
Got
I'm
one
excited
more.
For this one. Go for it.
Quantum Work Advisory. It's an Allegis company, acquires Talent Tech Labs, friends of ours, and have been putting together really cool ecosystem maps. They've done a lot of work in the startup community and recruiting in particular. So they've hosted events, they've brought in investors and helped people get investing, all kinds of
research.
Cool stuff. Yep. A lot of great research. Now, Allegis owns that. Well, they own it through their advisory firm, Quantum Work. But what's great about this for Allegis is they're going to take all that stuff that's public and now be able to make it have a deeper level of customization or analysis for their customers. So customers are struggling with which behavioral assessment to look at. Talent Tech Labs keeps track of all that stuff. And I think they'll probably still have a publicly facing thing and still do the, reports and probably still do ecosystems and stuff like that. But I think the clients of Allegis are going to win.
Absolutely.
So I think this is a great acquisition. This is on PRWeb.com. So you can go and kind of read the rest of the press release, but also kind of come to your own analysis as well.
Yeah, lots of smart people there. Their office was pretty cool. little thing all the way up in a building somewhere up in New York. It was nice. Always good stuff. All right, I've got one here from Robert Half. We're gonna get into a couple research pieces.
Okay.
So Robert Half ran a survey. Sorry, it took me a while to get that out.
Yeah.
Anyway. Women say that the crux here is that women say they are less likely than men to look for a new job in 2024.
Huh.
Yeah. So pretty basic. There's a lot of stuff in here, and we'll just drop the link in there. I forgot where I got this. This was at Robert Half. So anyhow, pay gaps still exist. No surprise there, right? But 60% of the women surveyed believe that there are ample opportunities for growth compared to the men. So that's good, right? 45% say they wouldn't leave their job anyway because of the level of flexibility that they're not willing to lose.
Right. I could see that. So now that makes sense to me. They're less likely than men to look for a job because the jobs that they're being attracted to probably have more of a return to office or less flexibility. We'll just call it that.
Less flexibility, right? So, and this would be true in my household too. I mean, we're pretty flexible here, right?
Right.
I mean, you let me leave a little bit, right? And I get to do things. but that's true here too. I mean, like we're pretty even on driving the kids places. My wife's a teacher, and so her going, if she were to go into a corporate role, that would really affect what we can and cannot do here. Because even though I'm at home, and we all know, here at home, that means you're working. Like, you're not like, hey, I can go take you for a ride at 2 o'clock. Like, it's not the case. So I can see that. I can see that. But I can see that for men too. But I think what really kind of in the back of my mind, I think I was thinking about reading this and looking at the images that they have. Men are not ready to admit or to reverse the role yet. I know a couple that have become stay-at-home dads, and I know a couple dads that rejoin the workforce, and they need the flexibility because they have to go pick up three or four kids and take them to softball or baseball or whatever it is. But I don't think the majority of men are there. I don't think I think that's what I was thinking about reading this.
Until you have parity there, will you ever have parity in pay? You know what I'm saying?
No, but I think that's a driving factor of this. Absolutely. Yeah.
Very good. Good. Yeah. Good find.
Yep.
All righty. So this is the this comes to you from the Linux Foundation.org. So this is the 2024 State of Tech Talent Report by the Linux Foundation. Turns out the sky isn't falling. Despite all the headlines and all that other stuff, only a minority of companies reduced their technical headcount in 2023. So what we've talked about in the past, they've reduced tech in one place and added tech in another place. Right. So when they're looking at it, they're looking at total headcount. You had so many people in tech before, you have so many people in tech. Now they might be doing different jobs. So the 2 points that I want to kind of bring out is the domains prioritized for staffing: cloud, DevOps, security, cybersecurity, AIML. The AIML is 43%, which kind of shocked me. I thought that would be higher. So I think that I want to look at that number next year and see that probably more in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But they also talk about cross-skilling and upskilling are the key strategies for technical talent management.
Yeah.
So here you've got someone that's been trained, classically trained in Java. Okay, how do we get them to understand AI? And now, so it's, we can let them go and then go try and find that person. Good luck. Or we can upskill them and reskill them into that position and cross-skill them.
All you have to do is pay them a training rate and take away their incentives, and they'll be perfect.
Nice.
Sorry.
It's the circle. The circle is completed.
Yeah.
So anyhow, sky's not falling.
No, it's not. And I think it's important for people to understand. I think people in our circle, the industry,
right?
They get it. We're good. But I'm thinking like friends, family, neighbors. They read it. There's like, oh my God, the robot. Don't go did into you tech. See the robot? Did you say, yeah?
Don't go into tech. Like, good God, it's like, horrible. Look,
yeah, you're not losing your job. You're just going to move over here.
That's right.
Go get the their company's paying for certifications. They're paying for the training. By the way, you're still getting your entire salary to be trained, right? Which clearly is not the case everywhere. Move over and get the new skills, and you'll be 100% relevant for the next 30 years. It'll take you into retirement, right? This is kind of like your veteran contract. Go for it. Enjoy it. So,
all right. Let me throw another one at you. This was comes from ScienceDirect.com. Robots, meaning, and self-determination. Robots can make jobs less meaningful for human colleagues. So, read this report. Fascinating. So, because it's talking about the meaning of work, which we don't talk about all that often. So what is the meaning of work at its core? Is it better with automation, or is it less meaningful? As we think about the future of work, we should probably be considering the future of meaningfulness. So this is just one of these reports that kind of gets you to think. Again, it's ScienceDirect.com, and it's kind of like, I don't think we think about meaning and work. I don't think we have a shared idea of what that means. Maybe it changes. Maybe we'll never have something like that. But they're talking about as automation, as robots, as AI takes over different parts of this, that human beings then feel like their jobs are less meaningful. So what do we do in HR? What do we do in recruiting? What do we do in leadership to then change that? How do we create meaning in work while these other technological changes are happening? So cool report. Go check it out.
I think I'm going to read this one, but I'm already annoyed by it. I just won't be honest. I'm kind of like, you know, this
$5
is
like, hot dog. What?
Yeah. This is like, I know, Jesus. You want to roll with an extra dollar. Speaking of which, again, I know what? I'm going to cut the Stovin's app out, put it up on their page. Then there's another. I love the East End. This is our trivia spot. Every Wednesday, they sponsor the swim teams. Fantastic. Love you all. But if you want lettuce and tomato and onion on your sandwich, on your burger, it's $1 per. Dollar for lettuce. Dollar for. They'll give you the burger. Like, you'll get the burger. You say, can I have lettuce, tomato, onions with that? It's $1 for each. I get it. Just raise the price of the fucking burger.
My wife.
Like, I don't want to pay for that.
My wife, 100 years ago, she toured a lettuce factory in Monterey.
I didn't even know they had
So it's a processing part. So somebody picks, and they grow outside. Yes, that's true. But they get processed.
All right.
Yeah. Just inside. And it's chemical. Like, it's really super clean, you know, one of those bits. And, a head of the lettuce, this is years ago, a head of the lettuce was less than a cent. So think about, they're charging $1 and you're getting one, maybe two pieces of lettuce.
Yeah.
That's not even a fraction of a penny. That's insane.
And I brought my own. I'm not lying. I had it in a Ziploc bag. I caught the burger. I took out my lettuce, tomato, and onion. And I was solid. I care.
You shouldn't have told people that.
Oh no! I went there. I did. It was hilarious too. I wasn't trying to be funny. I was actually like,
That's why people bring stuff into the theater. It's just like, it's gonna be $13.
Yeah, you want a nine dollar box of M&Ms? The dollar store has them for $1.25. No. I'm good.
Dude, I'd love to actually go to Costco and buy a bunch of stuff and then just like be in a theater.
Sell it inside the theater for 50 cents.
Hey man, it's $1. Okay, you got $1? Yeah, great.
I guess. But I'm gonna look into this report. It's interesting because I actually think the opposite of this. Like, I'm the opposite of you here. I feel that the automation, the machines, all that stuff will allow me to get to my impact quicker, especially in a mission-driven company. If I can produce more, if I can produce it better, if I can preserve the quality myself by reviewing that, and I know that more people can get whatever it is that my mission's behind.
So I think a lot of this comes down to communication and being architected in a certain way. So if you architect it in a certain way, people feel that. And it's like, hey, listen, you're going to have more meaning at work because of this.
Right.
Right?
It's the Shark Tank.
It's not architected that way, some people are going to feel left out and are going to feel like, what matters? Anyhow.
Look, there's companies out there, they do socks, buy one, they give one away to charity, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. All right. So I've got one about – this is interesting, and I understand both sides here. Okay. So this is about Hispanic, Latino, Latina employees reporting that the pressure to assimilate to work is basically breaking them, and it's just ridiculous. And so – There's a whole bunch of numbers. I mean, they did it. The sample size is only 2,400 people.
It's enough.
Yeah, it's plenty to go through. And essentially it's and I don't want to read the actual numbers here because this is one of those things where I could see both sides. Somebody saying, look, you're in America, speak English, right?
Yeah, what do they define as assimilate? What's the definition of assimilate?
So culturally, language, the way that they talk, the presentation, clothing, like all of that in the workplace, right? And so it kind of, I got a little bit triggered here. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't like calling customer service and not having someone that I can communicate with easily.
Yeah, fair.
But that doesn't mean they have to learn our language.
Well, I think technology changes all this stuff in the future where you talk in your language, the other person hears in their language. So I think some of this is just the moment in time. But
why should you not be able to wear your traditional garb? Again, because it's not mine.
I think when you deal with cultural identity issues, if you want the whole person to be at work, you accept the whole person at work, whatever that may be. If we're just talking about language, there's an easy fix now and on the horizon. If it's deeper than that, you get into more cultural identity issues.
Exactly.
Then that's harder. And I don't think anybody should be forced to assimilate.
No.
I think, and again, with English as a language, being an American, yeah, fair. Other than that,
it makes it easier to operate in the organization. I get it. But that doesn't mean I can't work with you because you're wearing traditional garb or a turban or something. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, no. I don't know. It was one of those ones that I know exist. It's those things that exist.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of got under me because there was a conversation. It was a comment, and it was one of those. I wrote it, delete it, wrote it, delete it, wrote it, delete. I just fuck it. I deleted it. It was about sports.
You know, Facebook keeps track of all that, right?
Probably does.
No, they do.
Somebody had made a comment that so and so should learn the language. It was about the Phillies, and I'm like, why does he need to learn the language? We're paying him $20 million a year. He should learn English. Doesn't need to. Why?
They should probably not be gambling. My bad.
My response, I was trying to come up with a response. Like, you know what? I don't need to be that guy. But how many American ball players, basketball, baseball, et cetera, soccer, go to other countries and play because they couldn't make it in the national leagues here?
Right.
They don't learn Mandarin. They don't learn Russian. No.
No, they have a translator.
They have a translator. Yeah. Whatever. All right. I'm done. Go ahead.
All right. The 2024 workplace trends on the minds of HR leaders everywhere. So this is PeopleManagingPeople.com. What I love about this report is it highlights specific HR leaders and their thoughts. So a lot of these reports sometimes are generalized. It's like 32% of so-and-so believe. This is actually Sally at General Motors, chief people officer, thinks this. So it's really worth downloading to see what they think the trends are. I don't think the trends are going to be super shocking. I think it's stuff that we probably already know. Mm-hmm. However, what I love about this type of report is it's just you can identify the person. And then if you agree with them, then, you know, that's great. And if you don't, that's great as well. But they're not hidden.
They're not hidden. Go look them up on LinkedIn and tell 100%. Them you love them or hate.
I like that.
All right. So, you ready to talk money?
Let's talk money.
Ding. We got some money. Rippling.
Yeah, we got a couple. All
Rippling right. is just tearing it up. Series F. They take another $870 million at a $13.5 billion valuation.
Right.
So for those that aren't familiar, Rippling is onboarding, payroll benefits, vacation tracking solution. Fantastic company, a ton of customers. Last year, they had $500 million at 11 billion, 11 and a quarter. So anyway, the fund, they're looking to expand internationally. And so in the small, medium-sized business area, and that's what they're planning to use the fund. They also, which is really interesting for me on this, they secured an office space, 125,000 square foot. So this isn't you know,
downtown San Francisco.
Yeah, this isn't 25, you know, cubes in an office or a WeWork somewhere.
10 floors.
This is a big commitment here. So I'm excited to see where it goes. These guys have grown and their customer base is massive and they're going to do good things.
So let's just make sure this is not a done deal. This is they're in talks, which means.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
So important. We just don't want people to think, oh shit, it's done. I didn't get in on that thing. No, they're really what they're doing is this is the roll up. This is not a roll up. This is the lead up to IPO. And that's what's next for them. I wish Rippling, the only thing I could say about Rippling is I wish they did more stuff in our industry. They don't really do a lot in our industry. They're kind of like ZipRecruiter in that sense. They're more of a business to consumer play, and they don't do a lot of stuff in HR tech or work tech or whatever. So I just wish they did more stuff with us. Other than that, great company, like I said, and good for them.
Yeah,
getting 10 floors and 130,000 square feet. You know, fantastic. I mean, happy for people. And that I believe the leader of Rippling used to be the leader at another company. I can't remember his name, but like Zenefits. I think he started Zenefits. But again, fact check that for the folks.
Yep.
All right. We're going to burn through these. Upstage raises $72 million. Upstage offers document processing solutions to help businesses enhance their work efficiency. This was built in sanfrancisco.com, so you can just put Upstage. It's a big round. So a B round, $72 million in a B round, that's a commitment. So think of what they're doing is AI and document management. The whole idea is to create efficiency for employees. Good for them. A big round. So go take a look at that. All right. Next one is Nectar announces $40 million in a Series B. And it's a kind of a commitment to expand their culture platform. So you can find this out at nectarhr.com. I like the name Nectar. So first of all, I actually like the brand and the name.
Kind of
and
made me thirsty when you said it. I'm not
you see what I'm saying? It's the nectar of the gods. So cultural foundation is built on recognition. So think of culture and recognition coming together. And so because it's new, it's going to be newer technology, but it's also, I think it's going to be aimed at a younger generation. They don't say that explicitly in their press release, but that's kind of what I'm thinking, what they're going to do. I think they're in Orin, Utah. So I think that's where they're based. So anyhow, take a look at their press release, nectarhr.com. All right. Careloop. So, I must say Careloop because it's caregiver stuff. So Careloop secures $20 million in Series C. That's a smaller round to accelerate growth and expand caregiving support solutions for businesses as well as others. So you can find that on Careloop. That's CARILOOP.com. It's in their press section. So the thing that is important to note about this, other than just following the money, is with an aging population, employers need to add more benefits, caregiver specifically, caregiver benefits. So, you know, this is just one of those deals, like these types of companies that are kind of coming in and adding more of these types of benefits, they're on the rise. They're going to get more money and we're going to see more of them. So good luck. Nice. Good for them. Careloop. All right. Three more. Paraform.
Bouncing through them.
Dude, just rolling. That's what we do. So Paraform, PARAFORM, secures $3.6 million in seed funding, which, by the way, that is a large seed round, especially in today's climate, to revolutionize recruitment for startups. Found this on DHRMap.com. And so you can go there and you know, just search for Paraform, and you'll find it. It's super, super easy. However, this is what's fun for me is this is the first time I've seen a rec tech play exclusively focused on startups. Like startups have a different way to hire. if they're under different stress, if they need something different. Like
it's all different. Yeah.
The whole theory behind it, the thesis behind it is fascinating to me. So I think it's just going to be fun to kind of watch. Again, 3.6 in a seed. That's some people's A round. So that's good luck to them. And I want us to watch them just to kind of see how they develop their ecosystem and develop their technology around startups. So cool.
Good for them.
Take-Two AI. You are going to love this. Sales recruiting platform raises $3 million. So this was at Pulse 2, number 2. So pulse2.com. So you can go find out more about that. I love this play. Because what it does is it does AI job simulation for sales recruiting, right? So now we want to hire you. Yeah. But it's AI based. Yeah. No, but for salespeople, it's great because it's an objection response, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't have the budget. Well, you know, you've got to be able, AI is just generating those things, and you've got to overcome it. Now we put that on the front end, like an assessment. So you go through, we're going to hire you as BDR. Hey, can you handle this rejection management? But they didn't say this in their press release, but I could see this actually being used for recruiters in the same, much the same way, because
recruiter assessment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, so it's job simulation. Like I love job simulations because again, it lets the applicant and the company know, is this a good idea?
Yeah, there's a lot of jobs that could benefit from a simulation. There was one, this 100%. Is a long time ago. I forget the company. They were using Oculus to do mining. It is a long time ago.
Yeah.
But the problem is they hard people to find. They'd find them, they'd get into the little mining cart and go right into the mine. And they freak out, like, get me out of this little thing, you know? Like,
Turns out it's dark.
turns out it's dark. You're in a 2-foot thing. You're like in a MRI shell going all the way down. Yeah. And so they started to use Oculus back at this time to simulate that. And it cut out all of the people coming in and leaving the same day. So yeah, I could totally see this as a recruiter thing. I don't know how realistic it could get today. But
speaking of MRIs, when I was in my undergrad, I was broke.
I totally thought you were saying when you were in your underwear, but it's all good.
Well, true. So when I was in my undergrad and underwear, I was broke. So I did a bunch of medical studies for money. Yeah. And one of them, it was a longitudinal study. I did it almost the entire time I was in school. And it was basically, how long can you stay in an MRI machine? So what I would do is go out and get hammered and show up. And I just fall asleep.
Is this where the pill addiction happened?
No. Close. And dude, it was so great. Because after so much time in an MRI machine, you start to hallucinate. Like you start to see stuff, ants, spiders,
I can't even get in. I tried. It's
great. Man, it's so awesome. Yeah. They paid like $40 an hour. Like, and I'm like, I'm going to stay in this bitch for like 8 hours.
Yeah, no, there's nothing I can do.
Cash money. All right, we got one last funding.
All right, take it home for us.
Wage Stream raises 17.5 million pounds. I have to say that as pounds
because it's heavy.
Sterling to enhance financial services for frontline workers. So really, what you need to do is this is at fintech.global, and you can go find out more about it. But think we're earned wage access in the United States and other types of benefits for hourly employees. So all kinds of financial wellness types of benefits. This right now they're mostly in the UK, and the investment came from UK investors, British investors in particular. But you can see this coming to, I think they have a little small presence in Spain and a small presence in the US, but you can see that this is what they're going to do is just they're going to focus on the frontline worker and build more and more, you know, financial wellness and financial services around them. So good for them. 17 and a half million pounds, which I think is about 21 million.
Yeah, I don't know.
Somewhere there.
I have no clue on the conversion.
I'm guessing. No
clue. Yes, so it could be 12, right? It could be 12. You never know. So a lot of funding this week. With one. You came with 97, so we let you run with it.
We're not keeping track, Ryan. That's all we do.
We're keeping track. I know you are keeping track.
You didn't mention a previous episode, though. So I think this is a success. This is it's a good Sunday for us.
I will take a win when I get it. And I did a little bit of research to make sure none of my stuff was in the documents from previous weeks. And yeah, it worked out. So,
good stuff.
So thank you all for listening, for watching. If you see us out there, say hello. Otherwise, have a wonderful, wonderful start to your week. We'll see you next
time. Snoopy loves you.